What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London in Washington. North Korea launched another missile over Japan early Friday, just days after the United Nations imposed additional sanctions on Pyongyang for conducting its sixth nuclear test. The missile was launched from the Sunan district in the North Korean capital of Pyongyang and flew over the northern Japanese island of Hokkaido Yoshiide Suga, according to Japan's chief cabinet secretary. Warning announcements about the missile blared around 7 a.m. local time in the northern Japanese town of Kamaishi. South Korea's military reported the missile reached an altitude of about 770 kilometers and flew far enough to reach the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam. The U.N. Security Council plans to hold an emergency meeting on Friday afternoon on the latest test. On a visit to storm-ravaged Florida Thursday, President Donald Trump applauded emergency personnel and the military for their response to Hurricane Irma, which inflicted heavy damage several days ago as it churned across the state.
We are there for you 100%. I'll be back here numerous times. I mean, this is a state that I know very well, as you understand, and these are special, special people, and we love them. Thank you.
Well, there are at least 25 storm-related deaths now attributed to Irma, just in Florida alone. An influential industry committee is recommending that the Federal Aviation Administration eliminate or scale back dozens of safety rules, including one on airline pilot qualifications. The FAA's Aviation Rulemaking Advisory Committee says the recommendations are part of a response to an effort by the agency to comply with President Trump's directives. This is VOA. Up to 400,000 Rohingya have fled to Bangladesh after a Myanmar military offensive in the western state of Rakhine. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said this crisis may be the defining moment of the civilian-led government. Philip Alexio has more.
Tillerson says the international community should support Aung San Suu Kyi, but also be very clear to the military and the government power-sharing structure that this is unacceptable.
And I think it is important that the global community speak out in support of what we all know the expectation is towards the treatment of people, regardless of their ethnicity, and that we must, you know, this violence must stop, this persecution must stop. It's been characterized by many as ethnic cleansing. That must stop.
A forthcoming United Nations General Assembly session is scheduled to review the situation in Myanmar during two special meetings in the coming days and weeks. A spokesman for the Myanmar government confirmed that Aung San Suu Kyi will not travel to New York, but remain in Myanmar to deal with the ongoing security situation. Philip Alexio, VOA News.
Well, more than 100 women kidnapped in 2014 by Boko Haram militants in Nigeria are finally preparing to return home. Pascal Davies has the story.
Nigeria's Chibok girls, once kidnapped by Islamist group Boko Haram, now celebrating their freedom. 106 of them have been staying in a government-owned facility where they've received psychological and medical care. They'll finally join their families. 270 girls were kidnapped by Boko Haram in 2014. 82 were freed in May after mediation by the government, and another 24 were released or found last year. Boko Haram's seven-year insurgency has spread fear across the country. The militant group has killed over 15,000 people and displaced at least 2 million others.
That was reporter Pascal Davies. After a 20-year mission, the spacecraft Cassini is preparing to make a final death dive into the planet Saturn Friday. Dr. Jim Green, Planetary Science Division Director for NASA, said their decision to end the life of the spacecraft in this way is because of what they found during the mission, the ingredients for life on some of Saturn's moons.
We had to make decisions on how to dispose of the spacecraft. And that led us inevitably to the plan of taking Cassini and plunging it into Saturn.
I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, September the 15th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. Nigeria's security forces say they will not be deterred in their determination to defeat the Boko Haram militants. And Zimbabwe's elections body officially began registration of eligible voters for next year's election, but the opposition is expressing concerns about the process.
I urge all eligible Zimbabweans to go to their established centers to register in their numbers. With these few remarks, I wish to declare the biometric voter registration in Zimbabwe officially launched.
Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe and Liberians are getting ready to head to the polls in less than a month. In Liberia's capital, Monrovia, presidential candidates are launching their campaigns.
I'm running to continue the good things that this government has done, but I also believe I have my own ideas of what need to be done.
Liberian Vice President and presidential candidate Joseph Boakai will officially launch his campaign for month tomorrow. And in the weeks after the deadly mudslide in Sierra Leone that killed more than 500 people, health workers are addressing mental health issues plaguing many of the survivors. Stay tuned for those stories, plus our Africa Sports Roundup, right here on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's elections body began registration of eligible voters for next year's elections. But as Sebastian Mofo reports, the country's opposition has reservations about the 4-month-long process which President Robert Mugabe called for.
I urge all eligible Zimbabweans to go to their established centers to register in their numbers. With these few remarks, I wish to declare the biometric voter registration in Zimbabwe officially launched. I wish the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission the best as it carries out its constitutional mandate to register voters and to conduct elections in this country. I thank you.
That was Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe at the State House on Thursday at the launch of the country's voter registration for 2018 elections. Immediately, he became the first Zimbabwean to be on the country's new voters roll being created using the biometric voter registration system. After the exercise ends in January, Mugabe is expected to announce the election's date. But as the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission was launching the voter registration exercise, the country's main opposition party was filing a petition at the High Court seeking the exercise to be halted. Tabita Kumalo, the spokeswoman of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, or the MDC, explains why her party wants voter registration stopped.
We are challenging the process of voter registration for a very simple reason. We are saying all the BVR kits must be in place. The time has come for this government to respect Zimbabwean people.
Rita Makarau, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission chairperson, told journalists that the voter registration exercise would not be stopped by the opposition MDC's court application complaining about the shortage of equipment for the exercise.
It will have no impact because the blitz is going to start in the middle of October, where we have the other 2,600 kits. In the meantime, we are using the 400 kits that we have. Our target is 7 million, so maybe let's talk after the exercise and see whether we'd have achieved our target or not.
The opposition argues that the 93-year-old Mugabe should have proclaimed the 4-month registration period when all equipment has arrived in Zimbabwe from a China-registered company that was awarded the tender by the elections body. The opposition fear that Mugabe will call for elections after the exercise ends in January, before all eligible Zimbabweans have been registered to vote. Zimbabwe's polls for long now have spilled into courts, with the opposition accusing the country's elections body of favoring Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, which has been in power since 1980. Now Zimbabwe's 2018 elections are already in court, even before the date has been set. The High Court of Zimbabwe is yet to set a date for hearing the opposition petition filed on Thursday. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
It is 25 more days before Liberians go to the polls to choose a successor to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. There are 20 presidential candidates, and tomorrow, Saturday, Vice President Joseph Boakai will officially launch his campaign for the Montserrado, which includes the capital city region. Mr. Boakai tells VOA's James Batty, who is on assignment in Liberia, his Liberians should give him the opportunity to continue the good policies of the current administration and to implement his own agenda.
The first thing is that the launch in Montserrado, we consider it as a launch at a national level, because this county represents a huge number of people from all the counties. And I believe it's a good opportunity to capture that audience. It's a good opportunity to share with them some of the things that I believe are important to moving this country forward. We all can say what we want to say, but we know that our country has a lot of challenges. I may not be able to spell it all, but it will be an opportunity to thank them, to give a little bit of what I think and what I know this country should be looking at during our administration.
Mr. Vice President, some of your competitors are saying 12 years is enough. Vice President Boakai should leave with President Sirleaf. Do you have any comment?
I think they are quite right. 12 years is enough for being a vice president. So I'm not running to be vice president. I'm running to be president of this country. And I'm running to continue the good things that this government has done. But I also believe I have my own ideas of what need to be done, what could have been done since 170 years. And I think this is an opportunity for me to do that.
So if they say, well, how come he did not do it for 12 years?
I'm not president. I'm vice president. And my role is very clear. I have done my job as the vice president. I'm going to do the work of the president of Liberia.
One of the supporters or key members of the ruling party, Vani Sherman, said recently that the party that you did not need President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's support. Is that the case, or do you want the president's support? And if I may ask, is there some problem within the ruling party?
I don't have any problem with anybody. I have differences with people on the way they think, what they want to happen. I cannot say I do not need support from a partisan of the Unity Party. All partisans of the Unity Party, including the president, their contributions to the party are welcome. So how can I say a president who has been at the helm of this party for 12 years, how can I say I won't need a help? If it's not forthcoming, well, but I cannot say I won't need it. I need everybody's contribution.
What do you mean if it's not forthcoming? As you said, she's been the leader of the party for 12 years. So you, one would think that she's going to be on your bandwagon.
That would have been an obvious situation, but I'm not complaining about it. The party is moving forward. As and when people decide to contribute, we welcome it. Some people want to begin early. Some people want to begin in the middle. We're still waiting for those who want to come in at a time they want to do so.
Let me ask you, Mr. Vice President, because some people have made the comment that they think you are old to run for president.
I don't think the Constitution barred me from running as president. The Liberian people feel very comfortable. It is the Liberian people that determine who should become president. And I can see that the Liberian people welcome me very much because my age has given me the opportunity to know what this country needs.
I did visit the red light market area. Listening to those women who are in that marketplace, I get a feeling that they expect a lot from anyone who is going to be president.
I have said, and I continue to say, that we're going to have marketplaces that represent the quality of life of our people, our women. Marketplaces that will have a daycare to look after their kids. Marketplaces that will have even a place where the market women themselves, we have an opportunity to learn. And my approach to this is that all the people who run around asking for scholarship, you want me to sponsor you, you should be able to give 2 hours to go to that market to teach those people, their children, and themselves. We have an opportunity for a small society that we are to give each and everyone in this country an opportunity to read and write.
Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai, he was speaking to VOA's James Batty from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. On now to Nigeria, where the spokesman of Nigeria's army says that the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram is ongoing with the aim of defeating the militants as part of its mandate. Army spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kuka Sheka Usman says that the army has so far recorded successes by sharply reducing the ability of the militants to carry out rampant attacks, including suicide bombings in parts of the country. But critics say that the army has not been truthful or transparent about the fight against the militants, who they say still carry out attacks. They say the army often claims victory only for the militants to attack those in the same areas the army claimed victory. Their comments came after Abubakar Shekau, a leader of the Boko Haram militants, mocked the army's ineffectiveness in a recent video. This after a 40-day ultimatum issued by the chief of the army expired. The ultimatum was to kill or capture Shekau. Army spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman tells VOA's Peter Cloti that the army would not be deterred in the determination to defeat the militants.
Well, the militants, actually, we are still doing what we call Operation Response 2. Invariably, it is a continuation of the clearance operation against the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists that have been happening in various nooks and crannies of the northern, particularly in Borno. As you notice, gradually, security problem posed by Boko Haram, especially suicide bombing, is gradually attenuating, and we are continuing and building on that.
The chief of the army recently issued a 40-day ultimatum to smoke out Shekau. The ultimatum came and went. Shekau came out mocking the military and all that. How are you responding to Nigerians regarding this?
You know, even the theater commander of Operation Lati Adole, in one of his press conferences, he addressed the issue. Normally, he directed to capture the purported leader of Boko Haram terrorist group Shekau is concomitant to overall objective of clearing the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists. And of course, the chief of army staff has come out to even commend the troops of Operation Lati Adole for doing a wonderful job because they, you know, took the directive with utmost zeal and determination to the point that it led to the neutralization of 5 key Boko Haram terrorist members. And that is why even when they came out in the so-called videos you are talking about, to allege that they were there, we challenged them to produce those neutralized leaders. And up to now, they have not been able to do so. And in fact, we have gone further to neutralize 2 more key leaders. So invariably, the move is closing gradually, and we definitely are going to capture not him, but the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists, unless, of course, some of them have surrendered. And as you can see, I think during this week too, about 67 or 69 of them have also surrendered. And on daily basis, we have been getting surrendered Boko Haram terrorists.
Some groups are complaining that the military has not been all that truthful and transparent to Nigerians about the fight against Boko Haram. They cited instances where they said the military said they have cleared the area only for Boko Haram to return in those areas, and that the military is selling something that is not a true reflection of what is on the ground. What do you say to that?
Well, that assertion is not correct. And unfortunately, people are trying to play with the issue of the fight against terrorism and insurgency for political expediency. The military has never come out to say a particular area has been cleared and security agencies have taken over and Boko Haram came back and attacked that community. It has not been so. Areas where you have had those isolated attacks were areas we suspect that we have Boko Haram terrorists, and they have not been cleared to the point that they always tell the inhabitants that look, this is the limitation or this is the area you should operate and these are the areas that you should not operate.
Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Osman is the spokesman for Nigeria's army. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. In the weeks after the deadly mudslide in Sierra Leone that killed more than 500 people, with 800 still missing, health workers are addressing mental health issues plaguing many of the survivors. According to the World Health Organization, there is a shortage of psychiatrists and mental health drugs in the country. WHO mental health specialist Dr. Florence Bayingana talked to Ricky Shryok about one woman who lost 16 members of her family in the mudslide and is suffering severe depression.
So she got slowly, she started to talk too much, to move up and down. She was in one of the IDP camps. And then the nurse noticed that she was getting restless and anxious, and she hadn't slept for days. So they gave her a little bit of a sedative, but she seemed to be getting worse. And eventually they called in a psychiatrist and she got a little bit of an antipsychotic. And then she was properly reviewed by a psychiatrist and they found she actually had severe depression now. It was 3 weeks after. 3 weeks after, we could recognize now that it's a very severe psychotic depression.
This is just one case of, I'm guessing, many people who are undergoing anxiety, depression after the mudslides. Is that correct?
Yes, this is only one case. So right after the mudslide, our nurses, not ours, WHO, but Government Ministry of Health nurses were able to go in and they were doing listening and helping. In the immediate aftermath, there were people who would attempt suicide because they would say, I don't think life is worth living. So in the shock, some people wanted to throw themselves into the river. But with some intervention and counseling, they calmed down. Some people were not talking at all in the shock. So many days, some people just sat and wouldn't talk. They were not eating. They were not sleeping. It's the rainy season. So anytime it rains, some people are not able to sleep. They become very anxious. But now after 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we see the symptoms that we recognize as either severe anxiety disorder. Some people are getting panic attacks, severe depression, as well as PTSD.
Is there a shortage, first of all, of psychiatrists and psychologists in the country? And how is WHO working to address these needs?
Yes, there's a very severe shortage of trained, I think properly trained, qualified professionals like psychiatrists. In 2016, we got two psychiatrists back. They trained in Kenya. So we now have three psychiatrists in country. So these are three psychiatrists, but the World Bank recently recruited another one from Nigeria. And because we were just coming out of Ebola and trying to rebuild the mental health and the health system. So as part of that process, the World Bank has been recruiting various professionals to build up the training of specialists and also to provide services. So they had recruited a psychiatrist. So we have that one psychiatrist, and we also have another psychiatrist who's with King Pell. The other challenge is the one of drugs. The country has never bought mental health drugs at all in the history of Sierra Leone. The Ministry of Health has never purchased mental health drugs.
That was Dr. Florence Bayingana, mental health specialist at the World Health Organization's Sierra Leone office. She was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Freetown. And now it's time for our sports roundup with Samson O'Malley. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking, which was released on Thursday. Cape Verde Island made the biggest leap in the overall ranking, jumping 47 spots to be ranked number 67 globally from number 114 in the world. The Faroes maintain number one position in Africa, but 30 in the world, ahead of North African rivals Tunisia in second place, while DR Congo fall 14 places globally down to fourth on the continent, behind third place Senegal. African football giants Nigeria have dropped to fifth place. Staying with football news, host of the 2017 West African Football Union WAFA Cup of Nations, Ghana defeated Guinea 2-0 in their first game in the group stages in Cape Coast on Thursday. Goals from Steven Safo and substitute Kwame Kizito secured the first win of the group for Ghana. With the win, Ghana now top Group A, which also contains Nigeria and Mali, on 3 points, while Guinea are bottom. Ghana's next game comes up on Saturday, September 16th in Cape Coast against Mali, while Guinea will face Nigeria. The group's first game played early on Thursday saw Nigeria and Mali play a 0-0 draw. In today's fixtures, Niger will be up against Cote d'Ivoire, while Senegal will take on Benin Republic. And now to the Continental CAF Confederations Cup, where Super Sports United of South Africa will host Zambia campaigners Zesco United later tonight in the Total CAF Confederations Cup 2017 quarterfinal first leg clash. The two sides battle in a Southern African derby at the Lucas Moripe Stadium in Pretoria in what will be the two sides' debut continental meeting. In other fixtures, it will be MC Alger versus Club African of Tunisia. FC Rabat of Morocco will be hosting CS Sfaxien of Tunisia. And finally, TP Mazembe will travel to Obeah to face Hilal Obeid of Sudan. In basketball news, Morocco on Thursday became the first team to reach the FIBA AfroBasket 2017 tournament semifinals thanks to a 66-62 victory over Egypt. With the win, Morocco have reached the last four of the competition for the first time since 1980, when they hosted and claimed a third place in the competition. Morocco will now face Tunisia in today's semifinals. Senegal on Thursday also made a tremendous statement of their FIBA AfroBasket 2017 intentions by beating Angola 66-57 to join Nigeria, Tunisia and Morocco in the semifinals. With the win, Senegal reached the last four of the tournament for the third time in a row, advancing to Friday's semifinals to take on defending champions Nigeria. The reigning champions Nigeria saw off Cameroon 106-91. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports for this Friday morning. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this Friday, September the 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryok, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a great weekend, Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.